To brew. Chapter 1. A Wild River Man. If you can't beat 'em, you don't have to join 'em. Warren Doyle. I stooped over a thin stream, seeping past clumps of dead leaves and earth as thick as coffee grounds. My hands were grasping my shins, and my eyes were filled with tears. I looked up and found myself directly in his shadow. His full beard and round belly absorbed the rare rays of light that penetrated the canopy above us. His presence was unmovable, overbearing yet completely mute. Why doesn't he say anything, I thought? Why won't he try to motivate me or at least place his hand on my shoulder to comfort me? I wouldn't be out here if it weren't for him. I'd already hiked the entire Appalachian Trail twice, but this time it was different. This time, I was trying to become the fastest person, male or female, to travel the 2,189-mile footpath. I was aiming for a fastest known time. It was day 7, and I had already traversed almost 300 miles of the unforgiving yet alluring terrain. Maine, that dark, full-bodied beauty, had taken more than her fair share out of me. Now, just a few miles into New Hampshire, I was exhausted, filthy, and crippled by shin splints. I longed for a quick, dignified end to the shooting pains, the relentless discomfort. My current audience wasn't hiking with me. Instead, he had come in by a side trail to check on my progress. I couldn't decide whether I was grateful or angry to see him. I vacillated between crediting him with my progress and blaming him for my near demise. At least his presence gave me a reason to catch my breath. Through heavy breathing and repressed sobs, I asked him, "How do you know when to quit?" There was a drawn-out silence. Just when I'd convinced myself he wasn't going to respond, Warren said, "There's a difference between quitting and stopping." I looked up at his backlit silhouette, then I returned my gaze to the ground. Next to his thrift store sneakers, he had displayed a selection of vending machine junk food and neon-colored sodas. None of it appealed to me. Finally, I let out a deep breath filled with congestion and unreleased emotion, picked up a purple vial of synthetic energy elixir, the kind of unregulated ooze they hawk at gas stations, then continued hobbling down the trail. Because we knew that if I stopped, I would be quitting. I was a week into my record attempt on the Appalachian Trail, and with just 1/7 of the trail behind me, I'd already wrestled with the greatest hurt I had ever felt. The pain from the shin splints was sharp, stabbing, and hot, but the ache of covering nearly 50 miles a day was widespread, dull, and throbbing. It was an all-encompassing agony. I doubted I could make it to the end of the day, let alone the end of the trail. But with Warren by my side, I felt pressure, mostly positive pressure, to keep going. We were two people who shared the same questions. What was my capacity for endurance? Was it good enough to set a fastest known time? And could I outperform all the men who had come before me? Because I could still drag one foot in front of the other, I knew that I had not yet found those answers. Warren's watchful eye held me accountable to this very personal and painful scientific query. A week earlier, I had set off from the summit of Katahdin with a spring in my step. I descended just over 5 miles on a steep, boulder-strewn path to meet Warren and my husband, Brew, at the base of the mountain. Lots of folks wished me well or said they believed in me, but these were the only two men willing to drive to the heart of Maine, a place filled with black flies and bogs, to begin this experiment by my side. With each road crossing, Warren and Brew marked my progress. "You made it here this fast," said Brew. "You are this far behind the record," said Warren. "You have this far to the next road," said Brew.